What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war.
Libertarianism.
On drugs.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Hello. So you're in for a very, very interesting episode of What Would Save the World today. We'll be talking a little bit about Cop Watch. I'm here with Anthony Beckford. But first, I'm gonna play a poem by Stacey Ann Chin. I was lucky enough to get to see Stacey Ann Chin perform some of her poems this past week at the Communist Party USA. I actually got to meet Angela Davis. I'll get a little bit into how ridiculous that story is because, of course, what the fuck? Okay, my computer just did this, started playing a song from Next to Normal. Whatever, who cares? But yeah, I'll get a little bit into my Angela Davis story because meeting Angela Davis, of course, I have to have a ridiculous meeting Angela Davis story. I couldn't just be normal. I couldn't just be like, oh, I appreciate you so much. Of course, I had to make it like embarrassing as fuck. So this is by Stacey Ann Chin. This is a really good poem that she did at the event. Here we go.
It must be in the fucking water being force-fed to the police. They must also be feeding it to the prosecutor and the politicians who obviously care nothing about the staccato of black bodies falling like leaves in Ferguson, in Cleveland. It is December in New York and the world has lost its fucking mind. Christmas trees being erected like dicks amidst the groundswell of Bill Cosby accusers coming out of the closet of secrecy, synchronizing with stories about frat boys growing up rapists. All this as a national justice system wraps up pretty colored presentations to grand juries who collectively refuse to indict murderers captured on video, set free by unpopular opinions that overwhelm the evidence available to anyone with a fucking cellular phone. I'm holding my own fury for the fact of my little girl born black in a country in which her brown body doesn't matter to anyone with any power. Being black and woman is hard in this topsy-turvy world where all men are created equal if they are white and heterosexual. I'm watching these murderers on repeat, the helpless bile rising angry in my chest. I am so not feeling forgiving today. It is time for the oppressors to turn their cheeks to the countless victims. These public killings are modern-day lynchings. These events amount to a pour against the war. This is not a fucking video game. These murdered men and women are not dominoes. These dead children belong to parents who now mourn them without closure, without a day in court. We are moving backwards through history. Foolish as it might have been, we the people had swallowed the fallacy that trumpeted the end of the time when black mothers who lost children to white arrogance had no recourse. We believed our lives were far removed from that shameful time that supposedly ended when Emmett Till, when Herbert Lee, when Medgar Evers, when Harriet Moore, when Malcolm X. Back then, there was no hypocrisy about the system being stacked against anyone with a smidgen of melanin staining the history of their skin. 50 years after the Black Civil Rights Movement, we are still not protected by the law. This is not what we voted for when we voted in our first black president. This is not what freedom fighters hoped for when they marched against segregation in Selma and Chicago and Birmingham and Montgomery. This is not the dream Dr. Martin Luther King died for in Memphis, Tennessee. 50 years later, race relations in America remains a fucking cauldron bubbling angry under the ugly swirl of black despair and a lack of white accountability parading as a penal system in which 40% of those incarcerated come from a group which only consists 12% of the entire fucking population. I mean, with numbers like that, what good does it do to comply with those in uniform? Shot at 12 for holding a toy gun, strangled in an illegal chokehold for selling loose cigarettes, arrested without cause for being too black or maybe too loud or maybe too much her own woman. All these incidents filmed for families to watch the murders played out on primetime TV. A system sworn to protect us owes us something when it fails. A system sworn to protect us owes us something when it fails. And we should speak out against that system. And when we speak out, we have to learn to speak in solidarity. Our sorrow must be one. Our rage must be one. With one voice, we have to call out the names of the dead. We have to claim them as our own. We must continue to say these names. Trayvon Martin. Michael Brown.
Michael Brown.
Sean Bell.
Sean Bell.
Yvette Smith.
Yvette Smith.
Sandra Bland could have been any one of us. All these victims forever silenced by state-sanctioned executions. We have to find the courage to rise up for them, for ourselves, for our children, for our children's children. It is time to raise more than your eyebrows in protest. It is time to put your body where you say your politics lie. This is not a moment to invoke the sweet by and by. This is a moment for continued civil disobedience. If there is any humanity left in you, get up. Stand up, join a fucking protest, pick up a fucking pen, write or scream, wail or march, meet and gather, plan. We all have to strategize. It is time to raise the roof on these motherfuckers. It is time for America to come to terms with the permanent fact of black bodies. No matter what you do to our flesh, no matter how long they wage war against our spirit, we as a culture, as a people, we must remain a force of resistance to the proliferation of white supremacy. No matter where we come from, no matter how you got here, inside these brutal walls of these America, of this United States of America, white power must always meet fire when it meets us. Get used to us, white people. Learn to live alongside us. Go ahead, make the decision to do right by us. Do it willingly or unwillingly. We don't fucking care. And the white liberals among us, you have to find the words to speak to these white racist motherfuckers. You have to tell them, you have to tell them they have to get with the fucking program, because black bodies are never, ever, ever, ever going away. And I have one more piece to do.
All right. That was Stacey Ann Chin. Wow. I love her. I looked her up. Apparently she's been around for a very long time. I never heard of her until that event, and I am so ashamed. She is freaking incredible. I am here today with Anthony Beckford, who runs Brooklyn Cop Watch.
Well, the Brooklyn sector of Cop Watch Patrol Unit.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about what Cop Watch is?
You know, those of you out there who know me, and those who don't know me, I'm Anthony B. I run the Brooklyn sector of Cop Watch Patrol Unit, which was founded by Jose LaSalle. Single father, activist, advocate, mentor, you know, author and so forth like that, you know, dabble in the entertainment industry and so forth, you know, but that's about me, you know, Marine Corps veteran and so forth like that. But other than that, with Cop Watch, you know, basically it is the vanguard for the people. You know, it is, you could say, the militant stance against the police and their corruption, you know, and the protection for the community, and also the intelligence, you could call it the intelligence community for the movement, you know, which is Black Lives Matter, which is, you know, anywhere from the socialists, communists, or so forth like that, any movement that's against this system.
Awesome. So, like, anarchists?
Yes.
I always have to be that obnoxious little anarchist. Just like, what about us? But so my understanding is that, so Cop Watch Unit, you guys go around and you film the police. Like, what does that look like?
All right, so basically, imagine this. You know, I always want to say that, people. Imagine this. So, let's say you're out there walking one day and you happen to see an officer getting out of his car. He's doing a traffic stop. Now, to many people, it's just a traffic stop because we've been conditioned to think that, oh, it's just something normal. This person was probably driving erratically or got something wrong, violation. No, in the marginalized communities, that is actually racial profiling. You know, so we basically stop. We, you know, put on our cameras. Some of us have body cams. A lot of us have long-range cams. Put on our body cams and we, you know, put on our phones and stuff like that, and we start recording, you know, the interaction between the cop and whoever the subject is. And we don't do this because, oh, this person may have been breaking the law. No, we do this because this cop is more likely breaking the law, violating somebody's rights, you know, harassing them. Could probably lead to another Eric Garner, you know, Philando Castile, you know, so forth like this. And, you know, so we're trying to not make that happen. We're trying to minimize it to where it gets eradicated. We're trying to make their behavior now, we, you know, to become conditioned by us to where now every time that they come about, every time that they come into our neighborhoods and in your communities, so like that, they're watching their backs now because they know, oh, wait, they might be out here. Either they're on the roof recording or somebody's window or they're driving by, whatever, because the only cop that's afraid to get videotaped is a bad cop, which basically is all of them. You know, but, you know, basically it's just that, you know, we expose it, you know, same way, you know, Ramsey Orta exposed, you know, exposed what happened with Eric Garner and so forth like that, you know, and a lot of people maybe say, well, yeah, you know, you expose it, but nothing results of it because, you know, these cops aren't, you know, pantaloon them, you know, they're not getting arrested, you know, or charged, just like that. It's like, but people are now more aware of what's going on. These same people within your community who were once cop apologists, now they're seeing the frequent evidence. You know, they're seeing the frequency of these videos and like, well, when did this happen? I didn't hear about this on the news. You know, and they're like, wow, this is actually happening underneath my nose. It's happening in my block. It happened in my building. It's like, exactly. But then also it's empowering the people to take a stand as well.
Yeah. So how often would you say you're out there doing that? Like a lot?
Whew, every day.
So like what I'm curious about is like, so my understanding is like I hear people say there's no such thing as a good cop, and I understand there's no such thing as a good cop because like a lot of people who are power hungry for like a lot of like dirty, awful reasons become cops, and that's a lot of the same people who seek out powerful positions. And then there's always those few who want to do good and they join these groups. But then it's like if you stay, you're working with all these shady people and then you end up making these shady deals and you think that you're not, but you're doing it just for the best. And, you know, that's just the way the system is. So it's just like it's like twisted. And I think that that's what happens with police. But I'm curious, like, in your perspective, like, why is there no such thing as a good cop? And what, and like, what percentage would you say of the police that you film are breaking laws?
All right. So in regards to the good cop narrative, you know, I go by ACAB, which is all cops are bad. Because it's not only because of the power hungry people that come in and those who've gotten bullied, or those, you know, who have exes who, you know, hurt their feelings and they figure this is a way to get back at them. And trust me, that happens out there so much.
Oh, I know.
Much.
They were bullied, you know, when they were kids, or they were bullies.
Yeah, one of my friends from elementary school, that's why he became a cop. And that's why we're not friends.
Because he was bullied?
Yeah. You know, but one of the things is the fact that it's not only that, it's also the fact that these cops who sit there in silence and allow this corruption to happen in the station house and on the streets, and they don't, you know, they don't fire at their colleague who is committing murder. They don't lock them up. You know, they don't put them in a chokehold to stop them by all means. They don't put a handcuff on them and say, yo, calm down or report it. And
they
so
just let it happen.
They just let it happen. So they're just as guilty because it's the same thing like with white silence. White silence equals murder. So a cop that's being silent about it is basically giving permission and also condoning the action of that cop that's doing the action. So they're just as bad.
Oh, yeah. I actually had Elsa Waithe on here like months ago, and she was talking about very much the same thing.
Yo, shout out to Elsa, yo.
Yeah, Elsa, you can check out that episode if you want on audioboom.com. It's on there. Audioboom.com, What Would Save the World. And you're listening to What Would Save the World right now on Radio Free Brooklyn. Live streaming right now?
Yes.
Okay, we are live streaming right now on the Cop Watch page. This is a pre-record. If you want to hear this, hear the rest of this episode, you can tune in tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. And Radio Free Brooklyn is a community free-form radio. I can say fuck on the radio. I can say bitch on the radio. I can say whatever I want, and that's friggin' awesome. So did you want to... I'm gonna stop live streaming.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm gonna stop live streaming.
Yeah,
right
so
now.
Thank you so much for watching.
Y'all want to get that little teaser?
Yeah, we got that teaser in there. But if you like Radio Free Brooklyn and you're listening, you can contribute to our station by going to patreon.com/Radio Free Brooklyn. There's a lot of great shows on here, not just mine. And again, I'm here with Anthony Beckford, who's Cop Watch Patrol, or Cop Watch Unit. So what are you, part of the Brooklyn, you're the leader of the Brooklyn sector,
that's what you call it.
Okay.
Yeah, I started the Brooklyn sector, I run it. It's the biggest borough in New York City, but yo, it's worth it.
And silence is violent.
Exactly.
Silence is violence. So what I want to know is like, I asked you what percentage of the cops that you come into touch with, or like cops that you are filming, are breaking laws? Like how frequently are they breaking laws?
All of them.
All of them. Every single one of them.
Put it like this. Even the ones who haven't even had an interaction with that person, as soon as you stop a person and it is foreseen that there was no violations on their part, you're wrong for what you're doing. Because that means that you're looking for something, whether it be the quota, whether it be that you just want to exert some power and harass, you know, some hardworking people. But then also, you'd be surprised how many times, and a lot of people probably see the videos on my YouTube for the Brooklyn sector, or even on the Brooklyn sector page, which is facebook.com, you know, Cop Watch Brooklyn. And that's also for the, for the YouTube as well. But there's a couple of videos where you see me, as soon as I put my camera up, you see the cop about face and go back in the car. They don't even talk to the person and let them go. Now people are like, oh, that cop was nice. No.
That cop was scared.
Exactly. As soon as that cop sees me, and a lot of cops know me by the way I look, or they just see the Cop Watch uniform. And as soon as they see that, you know, they're running back inside the car. Then you have some who are so arrogant that they're like, no, I'm going to do it regardless. You know, but then there's been plenty of cases where I provided a video to the person and all of the tickets and charges have been thrown out because it was seen to be unjust for what the cop did.
That's awesome. But I guess what I'm asking is, like, so, like, that's, like, when people get stopped and you just start filming the police. But, like, what about, like, someone, like, stole something and then somebody calls the police?
All right.
The police show up. As much as, you know, I personally don't agree with that.
Yeah.
But what I'm asking is, like, how frequently do they break straight-up laws? Like,
all right.
I am not a law-abiding citizen. I'm just curious, like, how frequently do they actually, like, break very clear laws?
First, my disclaimer on this. People stop calling the police. Call your community.
Yeah, for real. I agree.
Matter of fact, call Cop Watch Patrol Unit. You know, we'll handle that out. But in regards to, like, say, like, somebody who stole something or somebody assaulted somebody, the police come out, there's plenty of times I've seen it as well, too. For example, there's an EDP, which, for those of you who don't know, is an emotional disturbed person. It's what the NYPD categorizes people at, which basically means even if you cry, they consider you an emotionally disturbed person, and they try to violate your rights even more. And they use that to try to justify them being violent. And I've seen where, got a call about, where was it? Where were we at? In Albany Avenue in Brooklyn. Got the call, went out there. The cops were already inside, so they didn't know I was outside. So they figured they had free reign of whatever they were doing. Now, this person was EDP. I guess they suffer from bipolar. So that usually just takes a counselor to de-escalate it. These cops are not counselors. They don't even have college credits.
They're not even required to take a conflict resolution course. That's what I learned from Elsa. Like, it's some of those things are like de-escalation. That stuff is like optional to police.
Exactly.
Which is ridiculous.
They're only taught that it's them versus the community, and that's very that's true. That's the first week of their training. So when they walked out, they still didn't see me. And in the meantime, this person is telling them, get off me. Evidently, this person needed to be around somebody who could de-escalate this person, somebody who could at least provide them with the medication needed. These officers were not looking at that. What they were looking at is, yo, we got a collar. Yo, if he moves the wrong way, get him. And that's what happened. The guy just shrugged his arm off of one of the officers, and you see them twisting his arm even more. I have a video where you see a couple of knees going at this person. Then when they saw me, that's when they hurry up and push him aside of the ambulance. And they commenced on putting their knee on his neck and his back, you know, and being on him. And then had the nerve to come over to me talking about, oh, did you see him kick me? I'm like, no, I didn't. But I saw what you did because I'm here for that person's behalf. You know, and you see that on a repeated moment because, like, there's a lot of calls where we get there so we don't know what happened, but we hear the person complaining. and so forth. And usually when the people are complaining, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, people, you know, yell police brutality just because. No, when people are legitimately complaining, they are distraught because these officers do take that power and they go above and beyond because they think that they are the mega force in law enforcement. So all these officers get this, get what I call roid rage and so forth, you know, and they're there and their adrenaline is pumping and they want to show off for the, you know, for their colleagues, or they want to try to prove a point to the community. So they will purposely, you know, whether it's a twist of the arm, you know, that tears the wrist, whether they're tearing the rotator cuff, you know, it's still something that they're doing and that's violating that person's rights and also brutality. So that's why I tell people, like, even if you don't see it, do not assume it didn't occur. Mm-hmm. Because trust me, there's times where even if, let's say you're a random person walking by with your video, you look back at that video and you may happen to just see just that little hint of a little twist, a little kick, a little knee, you know, and trust me, it occurs on them.
So you think that the majority of the time the police are abusive?
I
would believe that, and I do believe that.
Especially now in this new Trump era. You know, they definitely feel that they could just do it, you know, just willing, you know, willy-nilly. And so I'm like, nah, bro.
Yeah, so, like, what is Cop Watch focusing differently under the under the Trump administration? Is there any, is it different in discussion and, like, tone?
Well, we're escalating now on our approach. You know, we're out there more frequently now. We're going to the station houses even more to let them know, yeah, we're seeing you. You know, community.
You actually go and you let them know. Oh, yeah. Like you're totally like transparent about like we exist and your back.
Oh, trust
me. We're pressuring you to be good.
Exactly. Trust me, they know we're out there.
Good.
Yeah. Trust me, they know we're out there. Like Jose LaSalle says, Google me. You know. You know, they know. You know, they know that we out here. You know, and I myself, you know, I go inside a lot of precinct houses just, you know, just to let them see that I'm in their house. Let them see that this is not considered a safe space, because that's like a fraternity who has their frat house. Nobody can enter, and that's how the police feel. This is why, you know, they have all these doors now with number codes, stuff like that, to where you speak to a receptionist before you even get in to really see anybody. So I'm the type of person, I will stand there right in the middle of your room and stuff like that. That way you're seeing me and you're wondering who is this black guy. And then you see Cop Watch Patrol Unit, or you see the body cam, and you're like, oh, man, yo, that's Cop Watch Patrol Unit. And then I walk out.
I won't say a word to you. Just show up just to say hi?
Yeah. I won't even say hi. I'll just show up, and then I'll just walk out. And now the whole time you're in there, you're like, is he outside? And then when you're driving around, is he around?
Oh, man. Now they're starting having to think. Like, you sort of almost like you learn the king's tools or the master's tools. It's like... So I keep thinking about, you know, like, I do a lot of, like, debate-like stuff, atypical. I got to learn the language of the alt-right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I have to figure, and I started wondering if I just started being like, why don't you believe in Black Lives Matter? Like, or why don't you agree with Black Lives Matter? Isn't it just rational? Isn't it just, like, the most logical? Like, isn't it just right in front of you? Like, it is the objective truth. It's right in front of you.
Exactly.
You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly.
Like, I've thought about just, like, starting to talk about it, but it's, like, right there. It's logical. So, like, making them have to look over their shoulders. It's, like,
exactly.
Totally like that. I always think about, like, when people at protests, like, they're like, who do you work for? Like, they think that the police work for the people. And like you said, that's not even true. You were talking about, like, how they're told it's them against their community, which is just absolutely. So it sounds like, so Cop Watch Unit, it sounds like you guys, you know, you watch the police. But you also said something like, if you need, you call the community, call Cop Watch. Are you trying to build up Cop Watch to be, like, an alternative to the police?
It's not as an alternative, just for the time being. On, you know, just as a safe zone, you could say, you know, call us, let us know what the problem is. There's many of us who will actually handle that problem because we're known in these communities. You know, many of us are part of different organizations who that way, you know, we could dispatch them out to the community and help with certain things, whether it's housing, you know, whether Johnny, you know, stole your chain, you know, probably get your chain back type of thing. But, you know, it's basically building community back the way it used to be, because I remember in the 80s and growing up, nobody, you know, I'm telling my age, but, you know, whatever. You know, I'm in the 80s growing up, I hardly saw a cop around, you know. But they were there, though. But they were in other communities and slowly started increasing, you know, their slave patrol to the other black communities, the more that they notice that, oh, wait, this is predominantly black as well, too. You know, we could get more money, you know, from overtime, from mass incarceration and so forth. You know, and I tell people, you look at the way that they're in our neighborhoods and then you go to, you know, a privileged white neighborhood and notice the lack of. And so like that, and it's like, whoa, you know, what's going on? Now, if you're saying, well, they're here because of the crime, you got to understand what caused these people to commit crimes. We don't have resources. You know, we don't have politicians that listen to us. You know, we don't have city council members that do right by us and so forth. So now the people have to stand up for themselves like we should have been doing for the longest time. Same as the Panthers did, the same as the Move, you know, same as the Brown Berets did and so forth like that. Like, this is what we have to do, you know, and Cotwatch is amongst those lists right there. We are the most militant out of all the Cotwatch throughout the whole nation and so forth like that. You know, we provide our trainings. We, you know, we're out there in the field all the time. The communities know who we are. They support us. You know, they're quick to call us if there's some dealing with a cop. It's over like that, you know. So we're basically helping the communities transition back into fending for themselves and building up their own brigades as well, too, to protect themselves, you know, and hold people accountable. Because you look at the days of sovereignty with the, you know, with the indigenous tribes. If you did wrong in that tribe, you were banned from that land. Okay, you were out there as a nomad. You know, good luck. How you doing? Take what you can with you. Goodbye. You know, and maybe we need to get back to that stance.
Like, where we actually take care of each other.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I actually experienced that a lot. A lot of people don't take care of that. And actually, a lot of what you're talking about, like, with the emotionally disturbed person stuff, makes me think of, like, assault and rape situations.
Exactly.
Because of the reason why I think is that I find myself, one, in, like, a lot of artistic and activist spaces where there are people who are, like, who have behaved abusively. And nobody handles it. And I am for, like, restorative justice on a lot of levels. Like, if people are willing to work it out, then if it can be worked out.
Yeah.
You know, there are all kinds of crazy situations where abuse goes back and forth and it's complicated. It's not always so cut and dry, but sometimes it is. Do you know what I'm saying? People don't handle that.
Exactly.
People don't handle it. And also about how the police do not handle assault and or sexual assault or anything like that appropriately, because usually they classify the victim of such things as an emotionally disturbed person, so they don't listen to them. Like, I know somebody who was assaulted and they were, like, crying and hysterical and trying to talk to the police, and the police just kept, like, talking to, like, this man who had maybe been across the street while it was happening, and they were ignoring them. They're like, so what happened here? And she's just, like, crying, like, this is what happened. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, totally, like, ignoring her. And I keep thinking about how there should be a team that is, like, it doesn't have to be all women, but I thought it could be, like, almost like a femme squad that, like, shows up if there is, like, an instance of something like that, that is trained in, like, in counseling for women or people who've experienced such trauma, and, like, knows how to advocate to make sure the police do everything fucking right if people are going to call the police. I don't really think that people should, you know, we agree that people should call other teams, but I still feel like, you know, some people feel like they have to, and if they're going to, there should be people there who know how to make sure the cops do it the way they're supposed to, because so much of those cases are not taken seriously, and that stuff is, like, thrown out and files are lost and then nothing happened. And also, I was going to say about, like, you were talking about, like, people committing crimes. Like, it reminds me, this is, like, a good segue into the Angela Davis stuff in a minute, because in the documentary 13th, which everybody really should see, it's a little statist, for my opinion. Like, it's very about, like, what laws need to be made. Da, 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 da. But, like, you know, maybe that's a way on the path. I don't know. I don't know what I think of.
Yeah, it's
like,
more of a reform type thing.
Yeah, it's pretty reform, and I'm not pro reform, but I am pro people understanding the abolition. I am pro people understanding the actual history and the actual, like, that this is a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's right in front of you. So I recommend you watch that. I posted it on Facebook. I recommend you watch that with your racist uncles. Like, they're not going to be able to deny that it exists. You know, you literally cannot watch 13th and be like, oh, it's none of this. The clip they show of Angela Davis, she's like, what's a crime? And what is crime? She sounds so awesome. 13th, you learn about this thing, ALEC. I forget what it stands for, but it's this, like, group of people that's, like, politicians and owners of, like, big business and corporations. They vote on what bills the politicians should push into law, and a lot of that a lot of those things are, like, the minimum sentence, or, like, all that shit. I'm not going to be able to explain it all right now, but you should watch 13.
Yeah, basically Jim Crow era laws and oppressive laws to basically criminalize all the black and brown and indigenous people so that way slavery can stay legal in a stance of mass incarceration.
Yeah, and then I think what it is, it's like, oh, well, slavery is illegal unless you commit a crime or you commit, and then that's what it, and then, you know, yeah, it's like make everything a crime, target black and brown communities, yeah, you know, so you should, and you should really watch 13th or read the new Jim Crow. And also, I also want to talk about a little bit Black Panthers. Like, if you don't understand Black Panthers were awesome, you need to do some more reading. You need to understand that's where free lunches came from in schools. And they're trying to take that away right now.
And the WIC program.
And the WIC program. Okay, I did not know that one. Now I know. So so everywhere you turn, you're like, oh, the Black Panthers were awesome. And, like, yo, that's like, yeah, you should really know that. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Angela Davis for a minute. Just because this is, like, a really funny story. So we go to see Angela Davis, me and some of my friends, and we're like, should we buy a book? Should we buy a book? Because she's there. She's going to sign books. So we buy books, and we go over there, and me and my friend are literally, like, the last people before she's, like, trying to leave. Like, there's other people behind us, but, like, she's like, I have to go. And we're like, please. And she signs it, and then we're, like, trying to figure out if we should get a picture taken, and we're, like, following behind her and, like, trying to see if we can get one. And she's, like, taking pictures of people. We're like, we'll just do it. We hand the phone to her friend who's, like, really tired. And we're like, Angela, can we take one more picture? And she's like, there's nobody taking a picture. There's no camera. Like, Angela Davis turns to us, and she's like, there's no camera. I guess she didn't notice the phone, or, like, the person was holding it really awkwardly. She's like, there's no camera. No one's taking a picture. We're like, Sage, take the picture. And so they take the picture, and I'll ask my friend if I can post it on the What Would Save the World on Twitter. It's probably already on my Twitter, so you'll see it either way.
Yeah, I saw it on Facebook.
And she's just, like, got her arm. She looks like she smiles in one of them, but the other one, she looks kind of, like, irritated. She's, like, making, like shrugging almost. So, and, like, everybody could be like, we trolled Angela Davis. And, like, I love Angela Davis. Angela Davis is such a smart lady. And honestly, like, that Communist Party was so, like, statist. People kept talking about, like, the Democratic Party and laws and this and that. And then, like, we're talking about, like, reform, like, instead of, like, building outside. And I get it. I guess, like, communism, when it comes down to it, statist communism or systemic communism is all about, like, laws, like, extreme state. And I, you know, a lot of people want to talk to me and pretend like I'm a libertarian. I'm not. I mean, if you call me a leftist libertarian or a social libertarian, that's the same thing as an anarchist. So whatever. But yeah, I just feel like a lot of those people, she was one of the only people there who was not talking like that, who seemed to understand that capitalism is, like, inherently, like, not equal.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like people don't seem to, I mean, everybody there, like, understood that, like, equality is a good idea and, like, all that shit and that, like, we haven't really, as a society, conquered the racism stuff, and that racism's very, very real. But still, people who just don't want to, like, look at, like, the way our government works and be like, they want to be like, oh, we can keep changing it and not just see that it's, like, totally broken. Like, you just keep putting Band-Aids on something when it needs stitches, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't work. So were you involved in activism before you got involved with Cop Watch?
Yeah, I've actually been an activist since I was 12 years old.
Oh, my God. Tell me about that. I have to hear.
Yeah, that's when I started fighting against the school-to-prison pipelines.
Ooh.
And for those of you all who don't know about this, put it like this. If you're in a black and brown community, that A school that they tell you about, when you compare that to a school in a privileged area, that school is basically considered an F. So you got the high line F, which basically they're trying to sell to you and so forth. And that's because they take all the they've taken all the resources out. You know, same thing like the system is done to, you know, foreign countries and so like that. They take the natural resources that you have. You know, they demonize the people that are fighting, you know, for the resources, you know, and
like in Mexico.
Yeah. You know, and it's their way of keeping a working machine of conditioning of things that they could criminalize people for, or loss of hope, you know, that people can't get, you know. And I was 12 years old. This is when the rezoning that de Blasio has been pushing for so long, so like that. This was the starting phase of, well, Yeah, the new beginning of it, because of course, you know, we had segregation, you know, back before I was born, but this was the reintroduction of segregation into the school systems where they, I was in District 18 at the time, and I was in junior high school, so I was about like 11, 12 years old, and they were like, oh, you know, went to a Board of Ed meeting that my mom brought me to. She was like, well, you know, the people up there on stage, you know, the chancellor and all them were like, oh, so, well, you know, we're thinking about, you know, moving the, you know, moving over and rezoning, you know, District 18 and District 23 and 21 and 20, something like that. And I'm looking at the map and I'm like, oh, look, that's my block. Wait, that's all black people. Wait, why is this in red? And at that time, I didn't understand what red and green meant when it came to the maps of these systems, because green meant wealthy, privileged, you know, good to go, good to invest in. Red meant black, brown, indigenous, fuck them, you know.
And were those groups grouped by district?
That's how they was going to rezone the districts in order to segregate them again. So I sat there and, you know, I looked at my mom and I'm like, hey, mommy, yes, I say mommy, you know, hey, mommy, you know, can I get a pen and paper? And she was like, yes. She's like, well, I said, I just want to write something down. So a page later, I wrote my first speech ever, you know, and I tell my mom, I'm like, hey, I asked my mom, I said, do you think they mind if I speak? My mom was like, go right ahead and ask them. So I went up there, you know, like I said, little 12-year-old kid, and I'm like, you know, went to this one white man. I'm like, hey, sir, can I say something? He was like, okay, hold on, let me go talk to the panel on the stage. So he went to the chancellor and his people on the stage. I think it was, school chancellor Gardner was his name at the time. He passed away recently. But they were like, yeah, allow him. Because I guess they figured, oh, this little kid just going to say, oh, please don't do this, and that's it. No, I did one of their moves and stuff. Matter of fact, I did a Grammy move. I said, I really don't have nothing to say, and pulled the paper out of my pocket and unfolded it. And I went through a long list of what I thought was wrong with it. I'm like, this is illegal. This is unlawful. This is unjustified. This is racist. This is, you know, this is unjust. And they're looking like, where the hell does 12-year-old come from? Is that really a 12-year-old? Is that a 30-year-old that's just short? You know? And I'm like, you know, I'm going through it like, you know, we have fought for our freedom hard, and we're continuing to fight, and we've had complacency for all these years, and I refuse to allow this complacency to allow, you know, these rich and privileged people to segregate my school district and tear my friends away from the resources that they need to have. And I went on and on and on and on and on for a good like 30 minutes. And then I lifted my head up and looked at the crowd, and the crowd was on their feet clapping and cheering. But
how old were you? Like 12?
12.
Fuck yeah.
And I'm looking, but I'm like, but I didn't take in the claps and cheers, because I'm like, congratulating me on words I say is one thing, but joining me in this fight is another.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I thanked them. The chancellor got up. He came to me. He said, I really appreciate what you did. He said, we're going to have a meeting on this tomorrow morning. So I left, you know, put it out my mind, because I was like, yo, I'm a little black kid from Brooklyn, Jamaican, Cuban, Ethiopian, Indian. They don't care what I say. Next morning, I'm in school. My teacher, and we're in Spanish class, and my teacher gets a phone call, and is like, I don't know what you did, but the principal wants you. I'm like, why?
Fuck.
I'm like, why I got to do something? Like, I'm sitting here in your class, you know? So I go downstairs. I get my pass from the teacher, go downstairs. I was at IS-232, which is Winthrop. And I go downstairs. I go to the principal's office. And they're like, what did you do? What did you do? And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, the chancellor is here. And I'm like, oh, well, what's that got to do with me? That seems like a problem for y'all. You know, they're like, no, he never comes here. I'm like, what do you mean he never comes here? Kind of find out none of these chancellors or even a city council member ever went to hardly any black school to even teach or talk to the black students and the teachers. So I was like, oh, I guess I did do something. They're like, well, what happened? I'm like, well, you know, I told them what I did the day before, and they looked nervous. So I was like, well, these are complacent people. So they're scared about what this little revolutionary child has done. Well, call me the little Malcolm if you got to. Call me little Huey, but it's going to happen. You know, and then the chancellor had actually had them call an emergency what's that thing in the schools? In the
meeting,
auditorium
conference?
For the students.
Oh my god. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
assembly.
Yes, emergency assembly. There we go. Yeah, it's been so long since I've been out of elementary school, people. So so we go in there, and then the chancellor calls me on stage, and then he says, "You students do not know me. My name is Chancellor Gardner, and I am your school chancellor." He's like, "But I want to introduce you to somebody who you do know, and this is your classmate, Anthony Beckford." And he wants to, he read something last night that meant something to me and that actually had a good influence on your future. And I'm like, what's this man talking about? You know? And I get up on stage and he's like, because of what, you know, Mr. Beckford has, and it's the first time anybody ever called me Mr., so I felt good, little big man up there. He's like, because of what he said, we took an early vote on a rezoning and decided that there will be no rezoning at all. And he said, as long as I'm school chancellor, there will be no rezoning. And I felt so proud. Like,
you should. That's an amazing
story. I ain't
going
to lie, yo. I was on my Diddy before there was Diddy. You know?
No, that's an amazing story.
Yeah, you know, but then, you know, of course, like I said, he passed away, you know, and then de Blasio came with this rezoning of communities, you know, with districts, and that's what that was.
Was he trying to rezone it?
He already did.
He rezoned it so that the red districts are with the red and that the green are with the green.
Yeah, that way it's identified.
The thing that I always hear about with that is, like, the thing that's so weird about that is because in some ways it divides the low-income areas so that they have less say over what happens.
Exactly.
So there's that part, but then there's the part where that if they divide them to make it that it's just the low-income neighborhoods and the, you know, the white neighborhoods, you know, they want, you know, let's be real about it. The way that works is that it makes it so that the schools in the richer areas get more funding because schools and everything, they get it from a lot of places, but mostly like property taxes and sales taxes.
Exactly.
And that's why the police mostly work for the rich because most of their salary is property tax and sales tax.
Exactly. And this is why when you people out there talking about, who do you work for? They don't work for us. They work for this system. They work to protect the property and to protect the rich.
And if you look at these like zonings, like you see it, whichever way you cut it, there's something fucked up about it.
Exactly.
If you cut in the middle to give them more funding from the richer areas, then you're giving them less say over the voting. You put it in like separated by the right and the red and the green, and then no funding.
Yeah, because
no funding, more say, but even less funding.
Exactly, you know, so this is why, you know, as a community, we need to all come out, same way Cop Watch did, same way there's the various organizations out there, you know, like Bashback, you know, Hoods for Justice, you know, NYC Shut It Down, you know, Life Organization, Revolutionary Security Corps, you know, all these people that are out there, you know, Rise and Resist, you know, all them out here doing what they have to do, especially if not now. Like, the first time I saw Jewish people.
A lot of people in Rise and Resist are just liberal, though. Just got to put it out.
Well, yeah, well, yeah. Well, you know, but there's a few who are personally connected with us that, you know, we respect because they agree with what we're doing and they're trying to transition, you know, into the radical.
There's a ton of awesome people in Rise and Resist. The Facebook group Rise and Resist is just like, I almost can't even breathe thinking about it.
Exactly.
Sorry, so I interrupted you.
It's cool, you know. Like, so you got all these organizations, there's JFRES, you know, there's If Not Now, you know, which surprised me. Like, yo, I'm a kid from Brooklyn. You know, there was the Jewish people in the Jewish community and those black people in the black community. You know, everybody knew where they stood. Everybody knew where they, stand with each other. And when I'm seeing rabbis out there taking a rest for us, I'm like, yo, this is beautiful, bro. You know? Yo, shout out to Rabbi Liz for that as well, too. You know, but this is what we do out here. And this is community. This is us, the people versus the system. You know, in the same way, at one of our Cop Watch trainings, you know, I had to tell because it was a bunch of privileged white people in the training that Elsa was doing, you know, and I back Elsa on these trainings and so forth like that to let people know about the gist of Cop Watch fully. And I had to let them know. I'm like, hey, let me tell y'all something. Now, what the police are doing is even clearing the way more for gentrification. Okay, gentrification is the new form of imperialism. The police are what you call the modification of the slave patrol. So I'm not gonna bow down to the slave patrol, and I'm not gonna support, you know, imperialism and stuff like that. But you could come to our communities and see what's going on in our communities. But like I said at the meeting, that don't mean that your ass could move into our communities. Come visit. Come over for some curry goat, some oxtail, you know, rice and peas or something like that. But, yo, as soon as that visit is done, go, don't move to my community. Don't be like, oh, I like this. You know, I like their culture. Let me come in. No, because one, that's appropriation. Two, that's imperialism. And I don't need you putting more police in my community, pushing me out, shooting my brothers and sisters, enslaving us just for you to get a good size apartment turned into a condo to where it's unaffordable for our neighbors anymore. And at the same time, you know, when you're out here and you see what's going on, speak up about it, because I'm going to hold you accountable. Everybody else is going to hold you accountable. And I want it to seep deep in your soul. And I want you to have restless nights if you allow it to continue. Because at the end of the day, your silence is equals, you know, up to the violence that happened. You may not do it, but same thing with the concept of ACAB. If you're silent about it, you're just as bad at that as the person that's committing it. So if you see a Nazi out there and you just allow him to talk reckless, and that Nazi is not going night-night, there's a problem. there is a problem. You know, like
there's
I heard
a huge problem that the Nazis are back. Yeah. That they were always there and we just didn't pay attention.
Yeah, yeah. They were always there. You know, your neighbors. Matter of fact, for those of y'all who saw Get Out, you know exactly what we're talking about, because I've been through an experience like that in
Somebody's
Ohio.
Somebody's got to take me on a date to go see Get Out. Email me at Took, T-O-O-K, at RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. And polyamorous, polyglamorous.
Yeah. You know, that was a definitely good movie, and there's a lot to learn from that, you know. So, and that even speaks about more of the appropriation, because appropriation isn't just the culture. It's also using our melanin as a trophy and so forth like that, you know. So I tell people, you know, I have this saying that's love my melanin or fear my resistance.
Hell yeah.
But that doesn't mean to come and try to experience my melanin without my consent. Because it doesn't work out like that, because you're going to hear my resistance, you know. You know, but like I said, you know, even with Cop, like everything that I talk about was in regards to Cop Watch is what the movement is, you know, because Cop Watch is a movement itself, you know, and, you know, it was formed by other people throughout the, you know, throughout different states, you know, even in different countries they have it, you know. But like I said, you know, us with Cop Watch Patrol Unit, we're the most militant out there, you know. We're always, you know, we're always recruiting new people in. We always have trainings going on and so forth. And the way that we do this is so that way the people can become empowered, you know, because, you know, I myself being a Marine Corps veteran, like this fit right into my thing, because I'm about tactics. I am about accountability. I'm about, you know, taking a stand against things. And things I've seen in the Marine Corps and out the Marine Corps have definitely supported my stance against, you know, this corrupt, racist, fascist system. Because the system, you know, I know before you said something in regards to the system broke, I have a belief that there's nothing that was ever broke if it was created to function the way it wants to be created. So the system was created way back by the Europeans to keep enslavement going and to keep oppression going, and it functions the same way. So any call for reform from any of you liberals out there, any type of reform basically is a modification of that oppression. So how can you modify oppression? That means that you are condoning the oppression in the first place, and then you wonder why we are so upset with you. You know, because then even that condoning of the oppression and then you modifying it comes your tone policing. You know, what you trying to tell us, oh, how to act and how to feel. You go out there, have hundreds of years, centuries of getting beat, getting sold, being raped, you know, displaced from your family, and it's continuing to this day. The family court systems, the criminal court systems, the civil system, landlords, police officers, judges, even some lawyers and so like that, you know, that work for the system. You know, they're there, the agents of the system, you know, who think, some of these people who say, oh, well, I want to change the system from within. You don't want to change the system from within. You want to get a damn job. But you're taking my oppression to make a paycheck. My suffering is not your paycheck. And if that's the case, then you need to cut me in on that deal, bro.
So I'm curious. So you said a little bit about how, like, working in the Marines influences the way you work now. But I'm curious, like, do you consider, like, being in the Marines being within the system?
And anything that defends the system is being within the system now.
So I want to know, like, how does that influence, like, your view of the system that you've been in it and you've seen it? Like, you've seen that level of the system, like, the military, industrial complex.
Yo, this is a whole new world. This is the rabbit hole right here. Like, for all you talking about, oh, you know, the military's good. First, let me put it like this. as being a Marine Corps veteran, you know, I do show love to my Marine Corps brothers and sisters out there, except for the ones who are Nazis, because you're going to get it too, okay? I got scalps to collect, right? You know, but at the same time, you know, we get shitted on just for being Marines. We are the first overseas. We are the hardest trained, hardest fighting. They call us the dogs of war, okay? We are the gladiators of military, you know, any form of military, okay? The government shits on us. Now, you being a black Marine is crazier even than that, because they literally called black Marines and brown Marines dark green and white Marines light green. Already we have racism right there, boom, smack in your face. And if you don't believe me, go online and look up a Marine Corps doll and you'll see what they call the black Marine and what they call the white Marine, all right? Now, check this out. Other than that, I see the racism, okay? I see the racism, and then also I hear about the different orders that we get, and I experience the different orders we get, and the oppression that comes with these orders on different communities, on basically overseas. Now, it ain't enough that I, as a black man, I experience this in this country, but then I see what they want us to do overseas, which is something that me and them conflicted on many times about. And I'm happy we conflicted, because I stood my stance on what I believe in and so forth. So I took that fight. I took the training that they trained me in, and I brought it back to the movement. And now this is why they hate veterans who come back and join movements, because now we're teaching the people, you know, even more of the truth and fighting and helping them fight against the system.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of those veterans were at Standing Rock.
Oh, yeah.
They're going around and doing that. So we got like 5 minutes left, but I got to ask you two questions.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, so you said people should call Cop Watch Unit. How do people get in contact with Cop Watch Unit? How do people get involved?
All right. So as of right now, let's say with my email for Cop Watch, Cop Watch Patrol Unit Brooklyn Sector, cpubrooklyn@gmail.com. You could hit me up on there. You could hit me up on Twitter, which is @CPU Brooklyn. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/CopWatchBrooklyn. And contact me via those pages right there, and I will actually, you know, send it out to the ones in your sector, whether you're in Queens, the Bronx, Harlem. Shout out to Steve in Harlem, Jose in the Bronx, you know, Staten Island, so forth like that. And we'll get that done. And, we'll be out there.
Cool. And, I want to say thank you so much, Anthony, for being here. This has been a great episode. People are probably going to learn a lot from this.
Show you right.
You've been listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. If you want to be on the show, if you disagree with me, agree with me, whatever, you can email me at tok@radiofreebrooklyn.com. Take me to see Get Out. You can also follow me on Twitter at @2, like the symbol KEDALOW. That's a Twitter. And you can follow this episode, probably get involved with some discussion. I'm going to have a bunch of questions and shit on there and links to CPU stuff. And I'm going to ask you one final question. What would save the world?
Revolution.
That's a simple. Okay, revolution. And that's actually a great segue to about, I love segues. It's a great segue. So I'm gonna play another poem by Stacey Ann Chin. It's actually influenced by The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And, also, I don't even know. I don't know if I have anything else to tell you. Oh, if you want to get involved with some of these groups that were mentioned today, there's People's Monday, Shut It Down. Shut It Down, just People's Monday, where we honor somebody who was killed by the police. And we say their name, we march around, we make awareness of their story, and that's really awesome. And you should get involved in all this shit. And here is Stacey Ann. Here we go.
I have the weird experience of looking at Gil Scott-Heron's The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And I did a kind of like modern day remix of it. So it's just really interesting, so this one is for those of us, including me, tied to my phone, can't be present anywhere, and we live our lives through these screens. Revolution Will Not Be Televised, a 2017 remix. You will not be able to stay home, brother or sister, however you identify.
You will not be able to plug in, log on, turn off, or cough out. You will not be able to annihilate your inhibitions with ecstasy or skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. Nor will it be streamed online for your convenience. The revolution will not be brought to you in four parts by Uber or Apple or Facebook. The revolution will not be presented by HBO without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you footage of Donald Trump wearing a red Make America Great Again baseball cap and leading a charge by Jeff Sessions, General Flynn, and Mike Pence to eat pork belly confiscated from a Brooklyn community garden in Bed-Stuy. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Oscars and will not star Alec Baldwin or Kate McKinnon or Tina Fey or Jimmy Fallon. The revolution will not take collagen from your ass to put pump and pout in your lips. The revolution will not get rid of cellulite. The revolution will not make you look five shades lighter, because the revolution will not be televised. Sister girl, there will be no movies of you and Tyler Perry pushing a shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide a flat screen television into a stolen ambulance. 53% of white women will lie to the people taking polls. So CNN will not be able to accurately predict the winner at 8:32 p.m. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no body cam videos of NYPD officers killing trans women in the instant replay. No Twitter pics of the San Diego PD shooting undocumented children in the park on repeat. There will be no audio recording of Melissa Harris Perry being iced out of television in a secret, non-transparent process. There will be no high-def videos of Al Sharpton strolling through Baltimore in a red, black, and green liberation pantsuit that he had been saving for just the right occasion. Game of Thrones, Sex and the City, and Scandal will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Brad Pitt finally gets back with Angelina Jolie, because black people will be in the streets looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no recap on the 11 o'clock news, and no pictures of hairy armed women, feminists moaning orgasmic from Melania Trump while she regurgitates lines from Michelle Obama's Black Power speech at the Tuskegee University commencement ceremony. The revolution theme song will not be written by Kanye West, Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Taylor Swift, Katy Perry, Justin Timberlake, or even the Backstreet Boys. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be back after a message about white flight, white privilege, or white people's feelings of guilt. The revolution will not save you 15% or more on car insurance. People will not have to wonder if maybe you were born with it or maybe it's Maybelline. Because the revolution will not make your lashes grow longer. The revolution will not go better with Red Bull. The revolution will not give you wings. The revolution will not fight the germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will not have an easy-to-use app. The real revolution will not be televised. You will not be able to stream it live from your iPhone or your iPad or your iPod or from the iCloud. The revolution will not be on Netflix or Hulu or Instagram or Snapchat. The revolution will not be on the screen of your choice. This revolution will be happening in the flesh, in the streets, engineered by real people, real bodies, unapologetically radical, unapologetically black, and unapologetically live. Yeah.
Yeah, she is like the fiercest lady I've ever heard speak in person. That was so intense. She was amazing. People like gave her like a standing ovation. All right, so thank you so much for listening to What Would Save the World and Ready for Brooklyn. I'm here every Wednesday from 2 to 4 p.m. You can check out my other episodes on audioboom.com. The channel's What Would Save the World. You can find me also on iTunes. And again, thank you so much for listening. And, you know, fuck Trump. Fuck the system. Bye. FTP. The music you heard on the intro of the show is by William Mulsom. You can find his music on soundcloud.com/William Mulsom. Mulsom is spelled M-A-L-S-A-M.